This show we're going to dedicate to one of the great contributors to the game. If you know curling at all and you've been watching it over the last several years, you will know Ryan Fry, who was the great third for Brad Jacobs' team. And they went on to win the gold medal at the Olympics in 2014. They won the Brier in 2013. They got a silver medal there at the Worlds. And his father, Barry, is who we'd like to devote this show to. Warren, he was a great contributor to the game as well.
Yeah, without question. One of the greats of his time.
We're going to talk about that and a lot more coming up.
Last rock, eighth end, up by two.
Should be all there. I don't think I'm white.
I don't think you are either.
Oh.
It's clean. Don't kill it, Ben.
Line's really good. Line's good. Right on the button, guys. Right
here. Last stone for Kevin Martin. They want it on the button. The sweepers are watching it. Fans are on their feet. Kevin Martin goes out as a champion. Cuts him to one. He will win his final Grand Slam, taking the Players' Championship. Talk about putting an exclamation mark at the end of a career. All he had to do was cut him down. Kevin Martin can celebrate. He is a champion.
So here's what's going to happen today in the show. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, and we've got the World Mixed Doubles Championship that started, and there's a lot going on. Brad Gushue, of course, is curling with Carrie Anderson. Also, the U.S. Mixed Doubles is going to start this week, and this sounds kind of confusing because they've got a team at the Mixed Doubles right now, but their national championship is on in Wausau, Wisconsin. And that's going to be followed later on by the U.S. men's and women's nationals this week. We want to find out all about that. We talked a lot about tiebreakers last week and the different ways of dealing with them. A number of people in our Facebook group feel the only way to settle tiebreakers is with a game. Also, we got a couple of great emails and a lot more. So, Warren, let's talk about Ryan Fry's dad, Barry. Again, we'd like to devote this show to him. He passed away on Friday. Warren, you knew Barry, and talk about him as one of the great contributors to the game.
Yes, Barry Fry was one of the great players from the 70s and 80s, and probably, I guess, even going back into the 60s would have had him involved to a very large degree as well. And we're very sad to report that Barry passed away last Friday after dealing with a difficult illness for quite some time. So all our condolences go to the Fry family, and particularly Ryan. Barry was from my era. I was in Edmonton, he was in Winnipeg, and so in those days, you seldom saw players from Manitoba if you lived in Alberta. You might see them in a Bonspiel in Saskatoon or Regina once a year, but unless you went to a national championship, you probably never rubbed elbows. So I had that pleasure of going to the Canadian Mixed Championship on a team from Alberta, and Barry was skipping Manitoba. And interesting enough, we got to play them in the very first game. We defeated them. But interesting from that point, we went on and lost a couple of games, and Barry went on and won 9 straight and took the Canadian championship. The event was played in Charlottetown, which was a fun place to have it to start with, and a lot of social activities around that event, and Barry and I got to know each other pretty well, and we became friends. Often when we'd see each other at curling competitions, other social things to do with curling, have some interesting chats and some laughs. Barry was a very good player in Manitoba. He tried to win a Manitoba championship many, many times, but didn't succeed. Back in those days, that wasn't that uncommon. Another couple of great players from that time tried for years to win Manitoba. And in the case of Merv Mann, tried to win Saskatchewan, and he never did, same as Gary Ross in Manitoba. Barry was in that category, but finally in 1979, at a fairly older age, he did win Manitoba and went to the Brier in Ottawa. And he won that Brier. And that was kind of a unique Brier because that was the last McDonald Brier. And it was the last time the Brier was ever played with a round robin. And really interesting, in the old round robin days, there were 11 teams in the Brier. So in every round, somebody got a bye. And by chance, the last game on Saturday afternoon, which was going on national television with CBC, Barry Fry had the bye, and he was sitting in the stands, and he had already won the Brier without being on the ice. So there was CBC for the whole day, televising Saturday afternoon, and the winner wasn't even playing. It really hit the note home that there had to be a playoff at the end. You just couldn't end it with a round robin. And so he was a person that lived that experience. He went on to play the World Championship in Bern. And interesting enough, Kevin, he played in that same famous arena that you and I played in. And unfortunately, he had the same result we did. He didn't win. But they lost in the semifinal to Norway. Certainly put up a good show, but again, they didn't win that world championship. Barry went on and continued to play. I think he played in Manitoba finals again many, many times. Didn't make it back to the Brier, but had he been in any other province, probably the Manitoba, he would have been in many Briers. But that's how difficult in those days Manitoba was. He did, however, as he got older, did play in the seniors. He represented Manitoba a couple of times in the seniors. And then with, I believe, Don Duggan and Ray Turnbull, they actually won the Masters around 2001. So he never gave up. He kept playing. And then his son Ryan became of age, and Barry mentored him. And I can remember running into them at the Canadian Juniors probably back in the early 90s. And Barry was there mentoring Ryan along the way. And he did a great job because Ryan has become one of the greatest players of our current era. And so it's sad that we all have to say goodbye to Barry. But again, he was one of the great ones, a Canadian champion and a great player of the game. The only thing about Barry, he had that tuck delivery. And I was trying to think a couple of days ago, the two players back in the 60s, 70s era that had that tuck delivery were Don Duggan and Barry Fry. And I was wondering to myself, is it Barry Fry who initiated that tuck delivery? That question, I don't know the answer to. But anyway, sad that Barry's gone.
Also on the show today, Brad Gushue is coming on, and we're going to interview Brad. He's over at the World's Mixed Doubles. At the time of recording here, Brad has snuck out a couple of wins. He played Spain, and I think he's playing Hungary right now as we do this. So, Kev, we're well underway with the World Mixed Doubles.
Yeah, you mentioned Spain, and that was a sneak, all right. Actually, Brad and Carey got down 4-0 after two ends and fought their way back, stole two in the last end to get that win, and then a 9-6 win over Germany, and they're currently on the ice against Hungary. So no surprise that Canada jumped out to a good start. Also, Jennifer Dodds with Bruce Mowat did as well. They're out to a good start. The Czech Republic, Palova and Paul got out to a good start at 2-0. One team that surprised me a bit in Pool A, I thought RCF would come out pretty well too, and that's Anastasia Moskaleva and Alexander Ehrman. But they started out 0-2, and that's a bit of a surprise to me. Kind of expected RCF to be strong, so we'll see if they can bounce back or not. In Pool B, Kristen Skazlian and Magnus Nedergaarden, very, very accomplished mixed doubles. They're at 2-0. Switzerland, Jenny Perret and Martin Rios. Again, very strong mixed doubles players. They're at 1-1. Of course, Oscar Erickson with Almeida Duvall at 2-0. And Tabitha Peterson, fantastic skip from the women's team in the U.S., has teamed up with Joe Polo, who's done well over the years in mixed doubles. They're at 2-0. One surprise in Pool B that I'm a little bit shocked of, Yurika Yoshida and Yuta Masamura from Japan are at 0-2, and I really expected them to start out the week strong. So we'll have to keep an eye on them as well, because I just think that's a very strong team, and they should do really well. Once again, this World Mixed Doubles is a six-team playoff, same as the men's and the women's, where the top team in each group get to the semis, and the next two in each group go back to the, if you want to call it a qualifying game or a quarterfinal to get into the semis. So I've been watching it closely. I love the mixed doubles, and it's going to be fun to watch going forward.
When you look at the world championships right now for the mixed doubles, Warren, what would hold Canada back after it's been under for a few days, if anything at all? Because that was an obvious struggle for them in their first game.
Well, mixed doubles is a different game, and it's certainly more wide open, probably four-person curling, in the fact that I don't think anybody is ever safe playing mixed doubles. And what's happened at the world level, many of these countries have not had four strong men or four strong women to form a four-person team. But they have been able to come up with at least one female and one good male player to put together a very competitive mixed doubles team. And so you see countries like Spain and Hungary that we've never really heard of before at the world curling level if you live in Canada, yet they've been playing in the Europeans for many years. But this mixed doubles has given them an opportunity to begin to expand and excel the sports in their country. And I think this has been another great thing about mixed doubles. It has helped expand curling around the world because it just takes two people. So I think that's another really solid thing. And the fact is, again, I think this team from Spain, going back a few years when this was just starting, they have been in the final before. Hungary, that team that they're playing this morning, they have won it. And I think they've been in the final a couple of times. And this is back in the early going of it. But again, mixed doubles is far more wide open than a four-person curling. And it's at the point that anyone can win. And Brad and Carey are going to have to be their best to come through this thing and finish on top. I think as well from a coverage point of view, TSN is covering a couple of games. This show will be released Thursday. They will have done one on Wednesday. But I think a big game I should mention is at 2:30 p.m. Eastern on Thursday afternoon, Canada's going to play Scotland, Bruce Mowat, and that should be a great game. Don't miss it.
I know you love it, Kevin, the mixed doubles. Are there any rules, Kevin, in mixed doubles that you would like to see in the men and women's four-person game?
I don't know about that, other than, of course, going to eight ends, which is what mixed doubles does. You know, the four-person game definitely needs to go to eight ends. There's no question about that. It just takes way too long to play a 10-end game with commercials and five-rock rule and all of it. So that's one thing I definitely would like to see changed to make the games the same. But to Warren's point, the coverage has been fantastic. I know TSN's covering a few games, but make sure you can go on YouTube and watch the World Curling Television feed. That's what I did to watch Brad and Carey play Spain. And it's terrific coverage. It was excellent to watch. So I just want to make sure everybody knows that, because in our Facebook group and myself just getting messages from people wondering, how can we watch this? Well, that's how you do it. And now, in Canada, if it's on TSN, you watch it on TSN because you won't be able to get the YouTube feed. But when TSN's not covering it, you can go on the World Curling Television and get it on YouTube. And it's really easy to do.
You're going to have to explain this to me, Hansen. So the World Mixed Doubles is on right now. USA has a team in there. And the U.S. Mixed Doubles National Championship is going to start this weekend in Wisconsin, followed by the U.S. Men's and Women's Nationals. Give us an update there, Warren, and why are the U.S. Nationals being held after the World Championships, and why is this taking place right now? I mean, it must be some sort of deal with COVID, but that doesn't make sense to me, Warren, that this team who's curling is not in their national championship right now. What's going on with the timing of all that?
Well, yes, I guess it does seem a little strange, the fact that the U.S. teams in the World Championships this year were the 2020 champions, and now they're playing the 2021 championship. The main function of this event, both of them, is Olympic qualification. And I'll just run through sort of the situation. And of course, with Olympic qualification, some teams have already qualified, Tabitha Peterson being one of them, in both the mixed doubles and the women's championship. So she's not necessary for her to play in it. And other teams like John Schuster isn't playing in the year because he's already qualified. But let's just take a look. So their mixed doubles is going to go next weekend. And it's the Olympic trials that this is all aiming at. And just to give you a little review of what their trials will look like. Their mixed doubles trials are going to be held in Irvine, California in December. It's going to be a 10-team event. Three teams have already qualified for the trials. Tabitha Peterson and Joe Pola, who are in Aberdeen. Corey Christensen, John Schuster, and Sarah Anderson and Corey Dropkin have already qualified. The top four teams from this U.S. National that's being played this coming weekend will also qualify for Irvine, and three more teams will qualify in a trials qualifying event to be set for September of 2021. When this is over, they'll start the men's and women's championship, and that will be taking place, I think, starting on the 25th. Same situation is the trials for both the men and women will be held in Omaha, Nebraska in November. Each situation will be six teams. The 2020 U.S. National Champions have already qualified, and that, of course, is Tabitha Peterson and John Schuster. The two highest-ranked teams in the 2021 National Championships in both the men's and women's, of course, that's the events being played next week, will qualify for Omaha. And three men's and three women's teams will qualify for the trials via a qualifying series of events to be held in the fall of 2021. Kevin might have some comments. Some of the teams, I think, that have a really good chance of qualifying out of these events, I think on the women's side, Corey Christensen and Jamie Sinclair are the two teams to watch. They actually were playing together a year ago, but Christensen actually formed her own team along with the other two members of the Sinclair team from last year. And Monica Walker, who used to play with Sinclair, is back with her. And on the men's side, I think Rich Aran and Corey Dropkin are probably the two best chances to come out of that set of things.
Kev?
Yeah, you know, I had got a hold of Matt Hamilton because I want to find out from, because the men's team, Schuster with Plies, Landsteiner, and Hamilton, they're into the trials. In men's, But John Schuster, of course, is in the mixed doubles trials already, but Matt isn't with his sister, Becca. And so I just got a hold of Matt, and he just said that after Becca was in the bubble for that long, to come home for a little bit and then back in a bubble again, just did not want to do that. So they're going to take their chances and try to get through. There's two fall qualifiers for the mixed doubles, and they're hoping to sneak in through one of those. And then Chris Plies, he just backed up at work. He just has to get some work done. Being in the bubble as long as they were, you can't take time off forever. And so John Schuster, actually, I talked to him yesterday. He was ready to play in both. He didn't mind. Come on, let's keep curling, but you can't curl by yourself. So he's at home, and but they'll do just fine. But Matt and Becca, of course, everybody enjoys watching them play, and so they'll be trying to get into the mixed doubles in the fall in the U.S. So that's the scoop on, because they're the best known team, obviously, in well, could be in the world of curling, but certainly in the U.S.
So Warren, clear up for us that certainly when we talk about qualifying for the Olympics, you know, Carrie Anderson, for example. Did she qualify for the Olympics? Does she get to go to the trials? I know Canada does, and I'm assuming it's her team.
Yes, she's already qualified for the trials to be held in November in Saskatoon is the schedule for it. I was just checking last night, and I think there's four women's teams have already qualified. And the balance of those teams will come from, normally would come from points that are going to would be accumulated over this last year and through the coming year. But I'm not totally sure at this point in time exactly how the balance of those teams are going to be determined, but the trials will be held in November in Saskatoon, and there will be a pre-trials event as well, which has been scheduled to happen, but same thing, no site has been determined for that yet either.
Why a pre-trials, Warren?
Well, this goes back to 2010 when this idea was started, and it was started because of the Olympics being in Canada, that a number of teams should be given the opportunity to try to get into the trials. And so the first pre-trials event was held in Prince George up in November, I believe, of 2009, just before the trials. And what happened, basically, the eight teams get in through the points and various things that they have done over the four-year period. And then there was these two spots left open for another group there just behind those to be able to play off to get into the event. So that will be happening again, too, if, in fact, the whole COVID situation allows this all to take place as planned. And, of course, at this stage of the game, who knows?
Kev, how did you get into the Olympic trials when you and you went on to win in 2010? What was it back then, 11 years ago?
Yeah, I don't remember how many teams it was. I think it was 10, but I could be wrong. We had won the 08 Brier and the 09 Brier back-to-back, so that got us into maybe the Canada Cup too, but there were different ways of getting in. But they had the pre-trials at that point. It just opens up the door to more and more teams. Now, of course, that's a discussion that we got to have with is that even appropriate? It's hard to say. The pre-trials did have Brad Jacobs come out of it in 2013 when they went to the Olympics and won the gold medal. So there's arguments both ways. You know, do you want to open it up outside the top X amount of teams, six or eight, and take a chance that somebody could get hot 1 week and just not be as good of a team on a regular basis, as consistent? But of course, you know, Brad Jacobs did fantastic in 2013 coming out of that pre-trials event. So it'll be interesting. We'll have to have those discussions when we get closer to the pre-trials itself this fall, when hopefully it all happens the way everybody's hoping it will. But then, you know, we'll have that discussion about how the trials should set up. Should we narrow the field to maybe six or eight men's and women's teams and not have it open to every team, because it's just to go off rankings. The most consistent teams are probably the ones we want to have at the Olympics representing us. But, you know, we'll have that discussion with, we'll bring in some of the top curlers and we'll see what they say.
God, one of the biggest events ever, Warren, I remember when I was working for you there in the patch, it was either in Saskatchewan or Alberta, that the Olympic trials was both men's and women's at the same time. What a huge 10 days that was. That was cool, Warren.
That was Edmonton in 2009, Jim, and that was a fabulous event. And of course, Kevin came out of there as the winner, so he was in his hometown, so that just added to the whole thing. So, yes, it was a great event.
Jimmy, do you remember that? It was minus 56 with wind chill. It was colder than Siberia during the finals on the Sunday. And it was 14,000 people in the building, they know that if they leave their car parked without being plugged in, for everybody listening to this around the world, we actually have to plug our cars in the wintertime or else they can't start because they completely freeze up. And that's what happens. All these tons of cars after the curling game was done were frozen solid. They couldn't start them. And, oh, man, I remember that. It was a cold. Oh, it was so cold. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I'll tell you a quick story about that. A couple of friends of mine, when they went to the Oilers games back in those days too, they just left their car running, Kevin, for the whole game. They would lock it up and just leave the thing running. I remember I was going over to the arena during that event, and you're right, Kevin, it was the coldest place on earth, in, you know, with the wind chill, way colder than like minus 40, got into the minus 50s, and I whistled out of the briar patch doors, and there's a guy there with no coat on who had decided to go over and watch the curling, and he was looking back. Okay, should he go back to the Agricom and looking forward, or should I go to the into the Coliseum? And I stopped, and I said, hey, do you need some help? And he looked up at me and said, I wish I was dead. It was so cold. Good God. A couple of emails. Like we said, go ahead and email us, and we'd love to read it on air, but keep it short. Kevin, Warren, and Jim, I can't tell you how much I enjoy your podcast. I listen to it every week, and I love the interviews and commentaries. Of all the things I missed during COVID, curling is at the top of the list. I usually play at the Royal Canadian Curling Club here in Toronto twice a week and play at least two Bonspiels a month and practice weekly on top of that. Having your podcast and being able to watch curling on TV has been a real blessing, and I'm so thankful to be able to have something to listen to and watch. But what has been particularly helpful has been our multiple outdoor viewing events during the Scotties, Briars, Worlds, and Slams. You see, I turned my backyard into my own patch and set up a fire pit and a 120-inch screen television with HD projector to watch curling in a physically distanced way with a group of my curling buddies. Everyone bundles up, brings their own pops, and we've spent the last few months like crazy Canadians watching curling outdoors in the cold. I thought I'd send you a couple of pictures along in case you'd be interested to see how we've coped with COVID and how much curling helped us to get through all this. Thanks for the podcast and helping us stay connected to the sport we all love. I put up a picture on my social media, so I'll do it again. Warren, you saw the picture. This was hilarious. Hilarious. These guys in their backyard.
I think it's opened up a whole new concept. I hope Curling Canada has paid attention to this, because rather than have to pay for these very expensive buildings to operate the briar patch in for a period of sometimes 10 days, you can just have the patch in the parking lot. I think you don't even need a tent. Just move a bunch of televisions out in the parking lot and some tables and some chairs, and away we go. It might have been a little rough in Edmonton back in 2009, but we've had the wrong concept all these years.
Absolutely. You know, every other sport, particularly football, has tailgating. Why can't we do it in curling now? Anyway, Scott, that's hilarious, and way to go, you guys. That's a great story, and I'd love hearing that one, you know, for a positive thing during COVID. We got another email here that I think is great, and I love the concept of what they're talking about here. And this is from Thomas Lips, who is the men's national coach in Switzerland. He says, hi, everyone. I'd like to share my thoughts about draw to the button, having hammer in the first end, and your opinion about it. When I look at both worlds in 2021, there was 194 games were played with 125 wins for those who had the hammer in the first end, 64%. 69 lost who did not have the hammer in the first end, or 36%. I think these figures are going up even more when the games are reduced to 8 ends. So my suggestion is playing the draw to the button after practicing the same way it is currently taking place. But the winner has the right to decide if they want to have hammer in the first end or hammer after 5 ends, so at the start of the 6th end. It should not matter what happened in the end before the break. I would imagine the 64 to 36% ratio will get much closer, and even closer when there's no extra end. Also suggesting that ties not be broken, but to give a win. Winner gets 3 points, a tie gets 2 points, and you get 0 for a loss. So what do you think of those ideas? Let's go with you first, Warren.
Well, I think the concept of hammer in either the first, or if it's a 10-in game, sixth end is a concept that's been thrown around a few times and discussed, thought about. I think it might have some merit. It's something I think that probably should be experimented with and see what happens, because it does seem, as time goes on here again, we're back to the point of whoever wins that toss in the first inning, or if it's draw the button, or whatever the case it may be, it's extremely important to the outcome of that game. And maybe it's too important. And maybe from that point of view, as he's suggesting, the way we even get out is you have a choice. You can have it at the start of the first end or the start of the sixth end in the 10-end game, but not both. Maybe that is the answer to some of the problems we are encountering today with scoring. The other suggestion is interesting as well, because it's one I have thought for a long time. Again, getting back into the games and the big buildings and also television. When you're running around Robin for, in many cases, 7-8 days, like Curling Canada currently is, the extra ends can really create a lot of havoc as far as the schedule is concerned, as far as ice preparation, the next draw coming in, and the fans. If you're between 4 and 6 or 5 and 7 is your time, and all of a sudden that's been cut down by 15, 20 minutes, even if you're going to get somebody to eat, it's a problem. So I think also as well, if you awarded 3 points for a win and 2 for a tie, this could also eliminate a lot of the issues with tiebreakers when you get at the end of the round robin as well. So in both cases, I think they're ideas that have merit, should be thought about and maybe experimented with a little bit. What about you, Kevin? What do you think?
So I got a hold of Jerry Gertz, who's a stats guy when we do our Sportsnet broadcast. He also owns and operates Curling Zone. So we looked back at the Grand Slams, and that's 8-end games. To Thomas's point, is it going to be higher with an 8-end game? Well, it's been proven, actually, that's not the case. But we went back to 2012, every Slam game in 10 years. It turns out that's hundreds and hundreds of games. So a really good cross-section of curling. In the men's game, it's 64%, same as what the world's was, 64%. Of the time you get the hammer, you win in the men's game. In the women's game, it's 58% over 10 years, 8-end games in the Grand Slams. So in the women's game, 58%, that's not really that hard to believe. 64 is higher than I thought it would be. So there, that is something that could be looked at if you throw the draw the button or whatever way you want to decide the choice. You could choose to get hammer in the first, or you take hammer in the fifth. Interesting. There's some strategy involved. Some teams are stronger in the first few ends. Some are stronger at the end of the game. So that's kind of an interesting way to look at it. But if you're talking about tiebreaker scenarios, and we've talked to lots of the top curlers about this, should there be tiebreaker games? Do you want to not go to the Olympic Games because of a draw to the button? Like, that's, in my mind, that was not fair this year at the Worlds. But if you go 3 for a win, 2 for a tie, don't play extra ends in the round robin. I agree with Warren that because of the amount of points being garnered around the round robin, all of a sudden you're not going to get nearly as many ties at the end of the round robin, and therefore teams aren't getting kicked out because of the draw to the button as much.
So Kevin, if you had to pick, you know, it would be after 5 ends in a 10-end game, and it would be after, I guess, a 4th end in an 8-end game. You got to pick. You want that hammer, Kevin, at the 6th? Or do you want it at the first?
Yeah, you know, even when we're commentating, we actually say at halftime now. We actually say that on air, like, oh, and it's the score is 3-2 for whoever at the half. Well, if we're going to start looking at the game in two halves, well, would you like the hammer in the first half or the second half? You know, as sports evolve, things tend to evolve naturally, just in the way we look at the sport. And so, you know, people are starting to look at the sport as in two halves. Okay, cool. If that's the case, well, we could maybe have hammer in the first in the first half and the second half. Warren, does that make any sense, or are we just going too far?
Well, I think it does. And again, comes back to the whole thing we've talked about a lot in the last year, and that's the ability to score. And when you're starting right now, I can say 64% of the times, if you've got last rock in the first end, you're going to win the game. I think that's weighted way too heavy.
Yeah. That's only in men's curling, though, right?
Only in men's, but even 58, it's still an advantage. And I think from that point of view, it needs to be looked at, because anytime if you're looking at a game between any two groups of people, when you can sit down before the game starts and say, after the first end starts, ah, that team's got a 64% chance of winning, I think that's too much. And so maybe, again, along with a whole pile of other things, it's something to look at, experiment with, and to think about going forward. Again, this game, as it changes, continually evolves. And I know lots of people don't want it to change and don't want it to evolve, but that's life. That's the way things work. Nothing stays the same. And I think the people that stay ahead of the curve are the ones that adjust when things start to change. They look forward and say, okay, maybe this is a way we can improve this. The same thing with the idea of 3 points for a win. Just as we're talking here, I'm thinking, this could be interesting if this was the case as to how people play that 10th end if you're one up without the hammer, which now you may be trying to jockey to just make sure you don't give up more than one. But if that was the case, you'd probably be playing that last end pretty aggressively to make sure you don't lose it. The start of the end, as I watch many times, it's kind of business as usual. Once you get down towards the latter part of the end, if things haven't worked out for the team that's down one with the hammer, the other guys start to play very much the fact of make sure we don't give up more than one, so we're going to go into the extra end. If this was the case, they wouldn't be playing it that way for sure.
Well, Warren, can you imagine at the end of a round robin? So you got a big round robin, you're playing, and some team is at, because you get 3 points for a win. So say at the end of the, somebody's at 24 points, another team at 23, 21. Well, that 21, they have to win. They can't tie. There's no extra end. You have to win the game. If you're at 23, even a tie moves you to 25. You move ahead of the 24. Like it just adds another whole bunch of scenario possibilities at the last round robin game or two. It would really ramp things up. Whereas a lot of times in the round robins at the Worlds, was it in the women's Worlds, everything was decided and there's still one more game to go. Like it was like Barry Fry sitting in the audience and he'd already won the Brier. It was like that. The final six was set and then there's still one more game to go. But this idea of having three for a win, two for a tie, that's really cool.
Warren, you straightened me out last night when we were talking about the tiebreaker thing. And I said, Warren, that seems like a very sort of unfair way to determine championships. And you said, well, the problem is it can backfire on you, Jim, when you slot in for television a day of tiebreakers or an afternoon and you don't have any, Warren. That's a big problem, right, for a broadcast.
Well, it's a big problem for the broadcast, but it's also a big problem for the building because you now have maybe had an event that's created some momentum. And I always remember in the past, an event that really brought that to my attention was the 1994 Brian Red Deer back in the days of a three-team round robin. So there was virtually most of Friday was allocated for tiebreakers. So we end Thursday night, there's no tiebreakers. Friday morning, Friday afternoon were slated. And so all of a sudden, this event that had momentum, and particularly when you look in a three-team playoff, you take the first-place team who's been on top of the attention all week, steps off the ice Thursday night, and you're not going to see them again until Sunday afternoon, plus all day Friday until Friday night there's going to be nothing. The whole momentum of the event stops cold, and you've got people, what do I do now? You go for back the old days, you could open up the patch, which we have done that at times when there was no tiebreakers. Not very many people show up. So I think it creates a lot of issues from many aspects, and unless you're running a local bond spiel or a provincial playoff or something where these other factors don't become a consideration, tiebreaker slot at times create issues.
Fellas, I hear footsteps coming down the hallway, and shortly will be a knock-knock at the door with our guest next.
Last Rock opening end in a very cluttered house for Brad Gushue. And it does it for
wow.
Two.
Got two, for sure.
Oh, nice to get the game shot out of the way early.
Huh? For sure.
To your point, Rob, if you'd miss it, it would have been Bruce Mullet's last one. What a great shot this is.
Well, the Inside Curling Podcast strikes again with good karma. Our guest, this is how good he is. He won at the club level. He won the provincial level. He's won at the national level. He's won at the world level. He's an Olympic champion. And now he's vying for the world mixed doubles. And I'm talking about Brad Gushue. How are you, Brad?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. We were just talking a little bit before you came on. I heard you talking with Warren and Kevin. You had a tough one. By the way, Brad, you're tied for first, okay, at the World Mixed Doubles, so look at it that way. down 4-0 early, and I heard you say, well, sorry I'm a couple minutes late, fellas, but we had to have a debrief. It caught you off guard a little bit, Brad, that first game.
You know, it certainly did. I think we obviously missed some shots. There's no excuse for that, but they played really good in the first couple ends, and getting down 4 with a mixed doubles game, the games are so fast that it's tough to come back. So we were pretty lucky to be able to pull it out, but we did play much, much better in the last 6 ends and quite happy with the win. At the end of the day, a win's a win, so it doesn't matter how you get it. And that's kind of the attitude we're trying to take right now.
Right. Take us inside your world right now over there in Scotland. What's your setup, Brad? Hotel? How much isolation do you have to do and all that jazz for the week?
Yes, we arrived over here, I believe, on Tuesday morning. We were stuck in our hotels until about Friday afternoon. We weren't able to do anything. Well, I shouldn't say that. They had allowed us to go out for a walk for 25 minutes here and there. It was kind of like one of those prison passes. And once Friday came, we were able to get together as a team and actually meet and discuss some things. And we practice on Saturday, practice on Sunday, practice again this morning, and play tonight. So it's been good. The rooms are, I would say, big by European standards. So that's nice. And yeah, we're just happy to be playing right now. It's been a long stretch before, you're allowed to go play a game.
Talk about the biggest challenges for you. I mean, I guess away from the curling, when you're doing mixed doubles, Brad, you've curled your whole life. You're over there now vying for the title. I would think one of the biggest challenges first, Brad, is the warm beer to get over that in Scotland.
Well, they usually give you an option. That's a good thing. In most places we've been, you can get a warm Guinness or a cold Guinness. So I'm always going for the cold one. But no, it's the biggest challenge really for us is just learning a different game. Like Kerry's only played, this is our second mixed doubles event. I'm not, hugely experienced with it. So it's just getting in there and getting used to how quick it is. And you can't really build an end like you can in normal curling. So, you have to make sure you're in good position right from the start. And that first rock is crucial. And the second rock is, just as important. So that's the big adjustment, really.
We'll talk about the debrief then before we bring on Kevin and Warren. Talk about what you need to do different, I guess, for your next game.
Really, Kerry and I have only played one event together. We played 12 games and we had a lot of success. We obviously went in the nationals and we were playing well, but we really don't kind of know each other all that well in a curling environment. So when someone's struggling, what do they want to hear? What do they need in the situation that we're in right now? The ice is dramatically different from when you start practice to when the game happens. So we had first practice today, and then all of a sudden on Kerry's first rock, you're kind of guessing at what the speed is. So that's something we didn't have to deal with in Calgary. And again, when you have a team that's played together for years, you know exactly what you need to do. But Kerry and I haven't been through that. So just trying to figure things like that out, and we're doing it on the fly. And again, we're pretty skilled. We're pretty easy to get along with, and we can talk it out and come up with a strategy, and that's kind of what we're doing.
Well, yeah, Brad, I watched the game today, and congratulations on the win.
Thank you.
But I would like to talk to you a little bit about the ice, because I was watching, and it seemed to get frostier and frostier, so then I went right to my computer, and it's raining in Aberdeen today, or at least it said it on the weather update. Yeah. So it must be a little bit humid there. Is that, do you think, what's causing the frost, or is there frost? Like, it looked like quite a little bit when you go wide.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I think really the big adjustment for us, we practiced first on Saturday, and fortunately they gave us an hour and a half on Saturday, an hour and a half on Sunday, and then 45 minutes this morning, which is tons of practice and way more than you normally get before a big championship. But the real issue was on Saturday, we showed up and we threw the first draw, and I came up 15 feet short of the hog line and realized that draw weight was about 11 and a half seconds. And, by the end of the practice, it got up to around 13.5, which is still slow by, major championship status. And then we show up on Sunday, and then it goes the other way where we threw a 16.2 to the T line, which for anybody that curls, that's lightning fast. And then today, or last night, they papered the rocks, and today was somewhere in between. So really for us, it's, we haven't found that comfort zone yet, and that will come. And, the ice makers are in a bit of a tough situation, because like most of these major championships, they got to, you know, put it together pretty quick, and they're doing it in May in a pretty humid environment. And they just didn't have it quite where they wanted it, I guess, on Saturday, but certainly by Sunday, they realized it was in good position. And then they would just paper the rocks to take a bit of the speed and add a little bit more curl to the ice. So the ice was good today. There's really no excuse.
Well, sure. You know, that's the way it is with major championships. The first game or even two games can be a little exciting. And then, but that was no different in Calgary too. At the start of the various bubble events, the ice makers would put the ice in, and then they've got to sort of figure out, okay, with these rocks and this situation and this. And, so that's no problem. But I was just watching, and it was in the seventh end when, you had a fairly, well, you'd think a fairly simple intern hit through the hole to for you guys to get three, but you actually said, well, we could draw for two. This is like, because how their female thrower, that intern spot really went, they get to curl like crazy there. And you're thinking, wow, how much ice do you have to take on this intern hit versus the outturn? It looked like it stayed quite straight. So a bit dished wide?
No, I would say it's pretty level, to be honest. I think the ice surface is good. The only issue is when you haven't played a spot in a couple ends, there's a, you know, I guess maybe to the frost point, there's a, you know, a little bit there that the rock can grab it and get a bit more curl. And in hindsight, I think later on in the week, we may play that shot again because we know where to put the broom and we can expect what's going to happen. We were guessing a little bit there and obviously we guessed wrong and you know, it would have been a lot smarter play again in hindsight to draw for two and take it and also take a chance at the measure. But, you know, that shot, looking at it and looking at it from a normal curling perspective, like you feel Kerry makes that 95% of the time. Sure. It's just, again, where we were uncertain in that spot and there are some spot that jumps. We just got caught.
Isn't that funny? Hey, Kerry's one of the best hitters in the world ever. And you and you go, gee, you know, maybe we should draw. And the thing is, you had all the momentum right then. You know, like you're coming back, you're down 4-0. And I think, what was it? You grabbed a deuce.
Yeah.
Then you grabbed three more in five. And then you had a chance for 3 and 7. So I agree with you. How do you not take the shot at three? But you kind of owned the game at that point.
Yeah, and you're thinking there, you know, if we make the nose hit, we're guaranteed a three, we're up two, you know, we win that 99.9% of the time. You know, we draw for two, it's still a little bit of a toss-up. Maybe, yeah, we probably win 60% of the time or 70%, but I'd rather be 99.9%. So, you know, that's exactly. It's real hard to not take on that shot for three, but again, hindsight, I was a little uncertain of the ice and so was Kerry. You know, neither one of us were real confident in the spot. And first game, yeah, we probably should have drawn for two, but it's, you know, it takes a pretty courageous play to do that. And we didn't have the courage.
Sure.
Yeah, Brad. So again, congratulations on your win so far. Let's talk a little bit about this event because this is a little different than has been happening at the world level with mixed doubles in addition to COVID. And in fact, I think the last mixed doubles worlds, there was 40 countries in it. This year we have 20.
Yeah.
Looks like they're going to go with 20 from here on in two sections of 10. And if we all understand it correctly, this is going to qualify similar to the men's and women's worlds, I do believe. The winner of each section is going to get a bye to the semifinals, and then the next top four teams will go into the quarterfinals. Is that the way it's going to be structured?
Yeah, that's correct. And all six teams that make the playoffs are going to advance into Beijing. And then the seventh place team or the seventh and eighth or fourth in both pool could have a playoff. Now, there's a whole bunch of scenarios where if China and England are in the playoffs, you know, it can mix and match because China has a direct berth into Beijing and UK basically is represented, going to be represented by Scotland. So England really can't qualify in addition. So there's a lot of different scenarios. They went through it last night in the team meeting and I kind of dozed off because there were so many of them. I hope Scott paid attention, but there's a lot of scenarios. But for us, number one, we got to make the playoffs to make sure Canada's in the Olympics. And then after that, you know, hopefully we can get on a run on the weekend and finish it off.
So there are going to be seven countries coming out of there one way or the other. Is that what I understand?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's eight teams going to be at the Olympics and China's going to be one of those teams because they're the host. So the other seven teams are going to come from here. Yeah, I think that's how I understood it. So hopefully I explained that right for you guys. Well,
let's clarify that, because I read something, I think, that said that the Olympics this time is going to be 10 teams. Is that correct, or is it going to be 8?
I just know for us, the goal is get to the playoffs. And if we're in that top 6, you know, we're going to make sure Canada's there. That's the main goal for us. Anything beyond that, we're not too worried about, because I don't want to be fighting for 7th place or 8th place. We want to be playing on the weekend and give ourselves a chance to win.
So who do you think your toughest competition is? I see that Bruce Mowat's in your section, so I'm sure he's going to be right up there. Anybody else in that group that you are aware of that are really, really good?
I'm not familiar with all the teams just because I haven't played a whole lot of mixed doubles, but there's a lot of really good teams. I found out Hungary has won, you know, this world championship twice in the past, so I wasn't even aware of that, but there's a lot of good players. Oscar Erickson's over here playing. You know, Joe Pola and Tabitha from the U.S. are a real good team. The Norwegian team is the same team that lost the Olympic final. So there's a ton of really good teams. I think, you know, you play this event 10 times, you're going to see a lot of different teams in the playoffs, but you're also going to see a couple teams there that are consistently going to be in it. So it is a good field. I think a lot of countries sent their best teams because they want to solidify that Olympic berth, and made it a little tougher on us, that's for sure.
Do you guys look at the stats of the player before you play? Like, your next game is against Italy.
Yeah.
Stefania Constantini, she's very consistent with her in-turns or out-turns hits and draws. She was 68, 69, 69, 70, depending on in-turn hit, out-turn hit, in-turn draw, out-turn draw. Amos, on the other hand, Massaner, is 76% on out-turn draws, whereas he's around 90% on any kind of hits. That's a big difference.
He's an incredible hitter. We've played him a bunch of times over the years, and he is one of the best hitters in the world, to be quite honest. He can throw it so hard and so straight. So I'm not surprised by that. I would say, you know, he is an incredible hitter. And the luxury, though, that we have in mixed doubles is you don't play hits nearly as much. And if you do play hits, you're playing long run back. So, you know, if we can get our rocks in position earlier, he's playing run back doubles or double run backs. So that's just a matter of us in the first couple of rocks getting things in position. But really, to answer your question, typically at a briar or a slam, yeah, I look at the stats to see if anybody's struggling with a turn or a hit or draws. Sometimes if you got a choice, you can leave them one or the other. What we found from the mixed doubles nationals is when you try and get someone to play a turn, it's really a challenge because, you know, we would force a team to play, or we would play our intern hoping the other team would play the intern, but the ice curls so much that they could play the out turn anyway. So it's really hard to force someone into, you know, a shot where they're weak at.
That makes sense. Cause there is so much, and there is a ton of curl in this building.
Even here, it's very similar to what we had in Calgary. We're looking at 5.5, 6 feet right now. And I'm sure that'll come down, but you know, they can still knit more. So I think we'll probably be looking at 5 feet for most of the week.
So, Brett, the rules of mixed doubles allows the person throwing first and fifth to be switched with the person throwing 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
And so far, I've noticed, I don't think you and Kerry have ever switched up at all, have you?
No.
Do you ever consider that, and why don't you?
We haven't considered it, and we probably won't. And the reason is I want her sweeping three instead of me sweeping three. And that's just laziness more than anything. but to be quite honest, you know, we were just talking about this with Scott and Heather. And my belief with mixed doubles is we need to go to 6 rocks. And we need to have equal representation where the women are throwing three, the men are throwing three, men are sweeping three, women are sweeping three. You know, I don't love this situation. There's a lot of men's or a lot of teams where the men are sweeping all five and they're throwing three. And to me, that's not what this game is all about. So, you know, when Kerry and I joined forces, I said, you're going to have to sweep and I'm going to sweep as well. And we're trying to do it as a team. And hopefully this will start a conversation in the world of curling that we can get it a little bit more even. That's just my view of it. You know, I see some teams that are very male dominant and I'm like, that's not really the intention of this. I don't think so. Don't want to be setting that example. And she's probably a better sweeper than I am anyway. So it makes it a lot easier for our team to make that decision.
So you think it should be 6 rocks?
I do. You know, my idea is the first end, the men or the woman throws 1, 3, 5 and the other throws 2, 4, 6. and then the next in you switch it around.
Right.
So you always have, you know, four ends where you're throwing the last rock, four ends where the female is throwing the last rock. And it really makes things even, makes things fair. And I also think the six rock is going to create a lot more interest in these ends. You know, it gives you a chance, one more rock where you can build an end, and maybe, you know, you see, you know, a few more run backs at the end where you can mess some rocks around and get a bigger end. I just think that one rock can create a lot more interest.
Very well may be. When we invented the thing, the thought was that by having the 1, 5, 2, 3, 4, that it would be switched on a regular basis depending upon circumstance. But I don't think I've noticed anyone to this point really seems to do that. So you may be right.
Yeah. And I think early on it did switch. You know, the first event that I played, you know, Val and I played together and we switched multiple times. But it just seems to be the standard now where the men are thrown in the middle and, you know, and the women are thrown the first and the last. And that's why I think it does need to be adjusted, because it shouldn't be that way, because it does aesthetically for someone that's not a curling fan or doesn't know the origin of the game or the fact that we do have the opportunity to switch, you know, may look at it from a different lens and say, this is a little bit male dominated. So
interesting. I just watched your whole last game. Man, it was good.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. Like it was a real battle for you guys to come back. And you know, I just love McDoubles, and it was so much fun to watch. And that seems to be consistent all the time. And you're never out of the game ever. Like you guys, you know, down 4-0, you think you're toast, but no, not at all.
Yeah. It is a fun game to watch. And I've become more of a fan of it over the years just because, you know, the four person game, at times you can get these ends where there's nothing happening or nobody really wants to take any chances. And in mixed doubles, you don't have that option. Like we would have loved in the first end today to get familiar with the ice and go up and down the sheet, but you can't do that because you got a center guard and you got one back four and you're not allowed to hit anything. So you have no choice but to, you know, muck it up in the first end, and it makes it tough and it makes it exciting. And from the fans' perspective, you're always going to see some sort of, you know, interesting ends.
Brad, you talked about not being familiar with the game. You and Kerry have only been together for a little bit. What do you do strategy-wise, Brad? Are you leaning on anyone? Do you have a coach? Are you phoning someone or other people to help you through this?
We've watched some videos. Both of us have watched, you know, independently watched some games. But we're relying pretty heavily on Scott. Scott's the national team coach for mixed doubles. He's been to this championship before, probably watched more mixed doubles curling than anybody. And Scott's a guy that I have a lot of respect for, even in the, you know, the four person game, they had incredible run with the Furby Four. So in between ends today, you know, we had a lot of chats about things that we did and if we could have done something different, and even, you know, when to use the power play and when not to. And that's something that he's much more familiar with than I am. And there's times when I think, okay, this is probably a good chance to use it. And he'll say, no, this is the reason why. And you know, there's always logic behind it. So we're relying on him pretty heavily. And you know, even after our games at the Nationals, we talked to Jeff Stout and Scott and bounced some things. If we weren't sure if we made the right decision, we run it by them and get confirmation or have them tell us that, nope, we messed up there. So it's, we're not afraid to ask for advice. Like I said, we just don't have the experience playing. So if you can rely on someone that knows better and knows more than you, why not do it?
Is there anything from the mixed doubles game they could borrow to put in the four-man curling, the regular curling, that you like or don't like?
Yeah, I do like the fact that, you know, on the first end, you got to go for it. And, you know, you don't have the option of feeling out the ice or just going up and down the sheet and breaking in the ice. Like you're forced into it. I like that. I think there's eight ends there for a reason. And, you know, there's a lot of teams and we've done it in the past and that take a 10 end game and shorten it to, you know, 7, 8, 9 ends. And some teams shorten it to 5 or 6 ends. I don't love that. I think that's something that I'd love to see go away. And I know there's talks about, you know, the blanks, you lose the hammer and different mm-hmm. things like that. I'm not sure what the solution is, but in mixed doubles, that's not an option. And I think that's a great asset to the game. And it makes for entertaining ends each and every end you play.
So is Brad Gushue sold on mixed doubles now? Are you going to continue pursuing this game? Are you going to try for the Olympics? What's the future?
Well unfortunately, age is not my friend right now. We have a teammate over here that nobody knows about. Her name is Jenny, and she's a physio, chiro, massage. So for me to do this long term, she's going to have to become a permanent teammate, or you know, it's physically hard on the body, to be honest. You know, it's something that as a skip, I don't have to deal with as much. And, you know, it's why you're not seeing many 40 plus year olds playing front end in the four person game, because it's so hard on the body. And even in mixed doubles, when you throw and you got to jump up and chase it at times, you know, that's hard. And, yeah, I'm going to play. We're obviously playing here this week. I'm not going to pack my bags and go home, but I certainly hope that, you know, Carrie or I are representing Canada, you know, in the four person games. But if it doesn't happen, you know, we're going to give it a go next year. Beyond that, I don't know what will happen. I certainly would love to play with my daughter again, which I did last year in our provincials, you know, prior to the, you know, COVID coming around. And that was a great experience and something we had a ton of fun. So I'd love to do that again at some point in the future, and maybe, you know, get to a national with her and let her experience that.
Brad, you're talking like you're getting so old that we're going to see in the world stick curling thing one day.
Well, I've been practicing with the stick, you know, the hip's not holding up. I gotta have a plan B here, Jim.
That a boy. Before we let you go, this must be tough on your dad, because when I met you many years ago, when you were at the Briars, and your dad, and I think your uncle,
yeah,
they never missed a championship of yours, and you always talk about what great support they are. This must be hard on your dad not being able to be there, unless he is. I don't know.
Well, no, he's not here. It is hard. You know, it's hard on him not watching us. This is the first year where they've missed the big championships, whether it was the Briar, or certainly if this was a non-COVID mixed doubles world championship, they'd be here watching me as well. So,
oh, they would have.
Oh, absolutely. They would be here watching and enjoying Scottish beer and golf and everything that Scotland has to offer. But, you know, as hard as it is for them not to be here, it's hard on us as curlers not to have the family support as well. And I look back, and when we won the mixed doubles, you know, it was wonderful to win, but not having that moment where you can, you know, hug your wife and your kids, your mom and your dad, and having that celebration, you know, that was a big aspect that I missed. And I've been fortunate enough to have that multiple times. And then, you know, when Carrie and I won, you know, obviously I felt great for Carrie, felt great for myself, but you never had that experience to share with the family and friends. So for us as curlers, we're missing that just as much as I imagine our family and supporters are missing being here, cheering us on. So it goes both ways. It's a little lonely when you have the bad moments, and certainly, you know, you miss it when you have those great moments.
We saw it in the PGA when no crowds were allowed, that a lot of, for lack of a better term, a lot of lesser known players played really well. And they were saying it's because they don't have the pressure.
Yeah.
Is it to your advantage, Brad, with no crowds, because you've played so good with big crowds and you rise to the occasion? Or is it an advantage for the lesser known teams that there's no crowds?
I think it hurt us. I think there's some teams that it didn't have any impact. I don't know if there's any teams in particular that it helped, but I do think there were a couple teams, and I'd throw Team Jacobs in there as well, that, you know, really thrive off the crowd and kind of that adrenaline that the crowd can provide. But I know me personally, I struggled with it at times during the Briar, and, you know, it got to the point where I was kind of like, they're not coming back, you know, so we got to get used to it. And really it was the mixed doubles. Halfway through the mixed doubles, I started to get a little bit more comfortable, and in the slams, you know, we were used to it at that point. So it was an adjustment for sure.
Okay. Well, we're all going to make cardboard cutouts. We've seen it in baseball. Okay. We're going to get one of your dad and your uncle. We got to send it over there.
Hey, Brad, before you take off here, I did notice today you guys look really good energy-wise. I was really concerned you might lack of energy just because of all the bubble and all the travel and all the stuff, the quarantine you've had to do. But you know what? You sound great. It sounds like you got lots of energy. And I watched the game today. You guys look fantastic. So good luck going forward. And I can't wait to see you, and hopefully and have a pop with you soon.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, Kevin. And you know, we've had some rest, and the most important thing, I really enjoy playing with Carrie, and hopefully she'll say the same thing when she comes on your show.
We'll have to ask her. But,
exactly. Please ask her. If she says yes, then you could air it. If she says no, maybe cut it out.
We'll tell her to keep her opinion to herself. If
she exactly. <says no. laughs> But we're having fun, and we've made that really the number one goal is to enjoy ourselves. And I think if we could do that, then you know our play will follow and the results will follow. So that's kind of the first domino that we're trying to knock down.
Awesome.
Perfect. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Love what you're doing for the sport and giving some people more knowledge on, you know, what's happened behind the scenes or what is happening behind the scenes. So good work. Keep it up.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Thanks a lot, Brad. Good luck to you. Go get them.
Perfect. Thanks. Take care.
Well, there we go, boys. Brad Gushue, certainly with the best curler in the world. Did you ever think, Warren, that we'd get to a day where Brad Gushue is saying, I'm getting old and my hips are sore? I mean, he's starting to talk about having to physically watch what he's doing because he's been curling for so long now.
Well, I was going to suggest to him, Kevin's got the answer to that, but I thought I'd leave that for a bit.
Kev, the guy's the real deal, isn't he, still?
Oh, yeah. What a good guy. But, you know, when I got my hip replaced, I don't know if you guys know, but the first person to give me a call after it was done, like the next day, once I got so I could talk because of all the meds, was Brad Gushue. So, Kevin, how was it? You know, and so I lied. I said, it didn't hurt too much, doll. We're all good. So, Brad, yeah, he's throwing a million rocks, and I think the hips are starting to feel them.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the curler's repair job in a year's going ahead. It's new hips.
Well, he's traveling with a physiotherapist. I said, oh my God, he's not, he can't be that old, but I guess he's getting that old, but he's still very good. Good luck, Brad. Coming up, we're going to be watching all week. We're in a lot of discussion in today's program about changes that are going to happen to curling. Everyone does know it's going to go to eight ends. When do you think we'll start to see changes, Warren?
Well, I think changes have been taking place through time. It just is a matter of, I think, people bringing forward some ideas and experimenting with them a bit. And I go back to when we even developed the mixed doubles game. It was putting the thing together and then experimenting with it and getting a number of opinions and somebody saying, yeah, okay, let's do it. And I think that's what has to happen. To some degree, maybe the World Curling Federation should be the body that leads the way in some of this stuff. I think, again, the players can lead the way. If they think that things should be different than what they are in some of the areas that we've talked about, they are the people that can really force things to be adjusted.
If you'd like to comment on that or any other topics we've spoken about, we'd love to hear from you. Email us, insidecurling@gmail.com. Also, we want to thank a couple of people. Rod Paulson and his company, In-House Strategy. Rod is the guy who's doing a lot of our social media stuff and Facebook page and all the other Twitter and Instagram. We want to thank all the people at Sportsnet. Warren Hansen, you're now a producer of this just by the amount of work you're doing every week. Amal Delek, thank you, Amal. It's mixed and sound designed by Amal as well. Jonathan Brazzo is helping us from Sportsnet with our social media. We're reaching out to curling clubs all over the world, inviting you to contact us and ask to set up a one-hour Zoom call with me and Kevin and Warren to discuss anything you would like about curling. Keep in mind, we're doing this on a limited basis to see how it goes. And if this is something Inside Curling should consider to offer down the road, we would love to keep doing it. So get a hold of us. Boys, that's a wrap on another show. We're going to be back next week with all the results from the World Mixed Doubles. And a lot more stuff to talk about. Thanks very much, everyone, for joining us. Kevin, take care of yourself. Warren, you have a good week. We'll talk to you later, boys.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thanks, Jim.